Welcome to Way of Warrior, Like It Matters Radio. And today we're going to talk about fighting your good fight. You know, life is a battlefield. And the question I want us to answer today is, what is your good fight? Today, I want to help you understand three things. Number one, that life is a battlefield. We're called to fight the good fight. Number two, I want you to consider, what is your good fight? And number three, lastly, I want to help you question yourself to help you find your good fight. And today we are so excited because today we will be joined by a special warrior, a special guest. Today you will hear from Kevin Sorbo, world-renowned actor who is known as the strongest man to ever live, but who has learned in his weakness that his strength is perfected. And by the way, when I say strongest man ever lived, he was Hercules. You're going to hear that from his mouth. And I didn't know this, but it was the number one TV show in the world when Kevin was Hercules. Phenomenal. Kevin is starring in a new movie called The Firing Squad. We will learn about the background of the movie and the heroes of that movie. We'll also hear from Kevin about his good fight. Here's a man who early in his career had fame, good looks, health, wealth, everything you could ever want. But that wasn't enough. His life evolved, and now he is in the fight of his life, his good fight. We will also have our listeners question themselves about how and what they are willing to live for. What is the reason they get up each day, do what they do, go home at night, get up the next day, and do it again and again and again? And let's consider the Apostle Paul. The greatest Christian to ever walk outside of Jesus Christ was always talking about the battle. He always spoke in battle metaphors. Ephesians 6, final word, be strong in the Lord in his mighty power. Put on all of God's armor so that you'll be able to stand firm against all strategies of the devil. For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly place. How about 2 Corinthians 10? For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, being ready to punish every disobedience when your obedience is complete. How about 2 Timothy 4, 7 through 8? I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there's in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. And how about 1 Corinthians 9? Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself shall be disqualified. We're warriors, and we're called to fight the good fight. Now, I'm not talking about guns and metal and steel and all that. I'm talking about the basic fights of every warrior. You know, we're going to have Kevin join us in a couple of minutes. He's going to call in the phone lines. But I want you to consider the mindset of a warrior. And I want you to consider the battles all around us. First of all, if you look at society, if you look at movies, we're going to have Kevin Sorbo, an actor here, right? Man versus nature, earthquake, hurricane, Sharknado, right? All those, man versus nature, man versus man. Most movies, most politics, most elections are man versus man versus society. Boy, we're going to talk about that one today with Kevin. Because today, if you don't say the right things, if you don't think the right things, then you have a world that is against you. So man versus society, man versus himself. This is the internal battle, what we would actually call the intifada. That's what it is. It's fighting the good fight. It's the internal fight. Number five is the spiritual battle, the battle for good and evil, the battle where the flesh is battling the spirit, the old man is battling the new man, the what I should do is battling what I should not do, right? Paul talks about it all the time, which brings us, I believe, to the sixth battle and one of the greatest battles, and that is the battle for our identity. You know, we have six levels that beliefs exist on, and the highest level is spirit, and the lowest level is environment. But right below spirit is identity. And who we are makes a huge difference, because when we know who we are, then what to do is a lot easier. And if we supposedly are a certain type of person, then we're going to act a certain way. And so the greatest battle truly is the battle for our identity. Are you willing or are you unwilling, based on who you are, to do something different? And we are blessed because we're talking about warriors. We're talking about fighting the good fight. And we're getting ready to go to the phone lines, and we're going to talk to the ultimate warrior, Hercules. You can't find a better warrior than Hercules. And Kevin Sorbo is an acclaimed actor. Whether you talk about, I think he did the first Gene Roddenberry TV show. He did Xena, the Princess Warrior. He was Hercules. He's done so many Christian movies. But today, he's going to be joining us talking about the firing squad. And the firing squad delves into the harrowing journey of three men who find themselves on the brink of execution. As the countdown to their deaths begins, a remarkable sequence of events unfolds, revealing the transformative power of faith and hope that transcends early trials. And today is about hope, and today is about redemption. So let's go to the phone line and let's welcome Hercules, or you might know him as Kevin Sorbo. Today, we are blessed. Today, on Way of Warrior, Living Life Like It Matters, we are talking to someone who has made the decision, who is fighting a good fight. Today, we're going to be talking about a great movie that's coming out in August. It's called The Firing Squad. It delves into the harrowing journey of three men who find themselves on the brink of execution. As the countdown to their death begins, a remarkable sequence of events unfolds, revealing the transformative power of faith and the hope that transcends earthly trials. The men's journey of redemption doesn't stop at personal salvation. It ignites a spiritual revolution within the prison camp, guiding the souls of the most hardened criminals toward the loving embrace of Christ. Based on a powerful true story of finding hope in the face of death, celebrated Christian filmmaker Tim Che is bringing to theaters The Firing Squad, an inspiring movie. It's about three convicted criminals portrayed by acclaimed actors Kevin Sorbo, God's Not Dead and Let There Be Light, and Cuba Gooding Jr., Jeremy McGuire, alongside breakout star James Barrington, who are sentenced to death in an Indonesian prison in 2015. And today we are blessed to have with us renowned actor Kevin Sorbo. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on. I love that intro to the movie because it is a great movie, and I've always been attracted to true stories, so this is pretty cool.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, The Firing Squad. You know, I've noticed there's a lot more Christian movies now coming out, which I love to see. That I'm sold out. I like to consider myself an arrow in the quiver of Yahweh. So I'm first and foremost a soldier of God. And was there anything in particular that attracted you to this movie, The Firing Squad, or what drew you to it?
Well, as I said, I love true stories. I love the fact that the character I play is the guy that does find hope and redemption in probably one of the darkest places in the world, in prison, especially when he was on a death row. I mean, he was an American over there surfing in Indonesia, and he actually got in a fight with some guy, and he killed him, and he got the death sentence. And Indonesia's prisons are pretty much like America's. He's been on death row for many, many, many years, and while he was in prison, what an amazing place to find God. But he found God, became a pastor, and he started doing sermons and saving a lot of souls, not only of inmates, but also of the guards there as well. The story takes place in 2015, so that's all backstory to hear what my character is all about. But Cuba Gooding Jr. is in as well. But the character James Barrington is really sort of the focal point of the show, and my character really looked at him. I always like to go back to Hacksaw Ridge, the movie Mel Gibson did, when every time that he was up on top of that ridge, he said, "One more, God, help me get one more." And when I see this kid come and realizing my days are now numbered before I hit the firing squad, he basically says to God, "Give me one more chance to save one more person." Because he sees this kid and sees a lot of himself when he was in his 20s. And sure enough, ultimately, my character was, he was killed back in 2015. So it's not that long ago.
Wow. Wow. Let me ask you, I remember reading about Jim Caviezel when he said how doing the Passion of the Christ with Mel Gibson, how it changed him. Let me ask you, playing this character, sharing the story that you just shared and the reality of it, did the movie have an effect on you filming it?
Well, I think the biggest effect that had on me, when they were filming another scene that I was not in, I had some time to sort of just kick back and memorize my lines for the next scene coming up afterwards. I walked into the prison we used. There was an abandoned prison here in North. I live in Florida, so it was about an hour and a half north of me on the East Coast here in Florida. There was a prison that had been closed for decades. And it was really kind of a spooky place. I remember the first time walking in there, there were, everybody, extras, everybody's changing clothes. And I'm looking around going, this would be a crazy place to shoot a scary movie. So when I went in there by myself and walked into one of these little 10-by-8-foot cells, and I sat on one of these, metal bunk beds that are just bolted into these concrete walls, and there was nobody in there with me. And I thought, I don't need to have some big tough murder guy tell me to get scared straight. I said, this scares me straight just sitting there thinking, could you imagine being there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years like my character was? And waiting to be executed. I said that we need to take troubled teens and put them in there. Amen. And let them spend the night by themselves in this place and have them come out. And I bet you a lot of them would think twice about doing some of the things they're doing as these crazy teenagers are doing. So that was kind of huge for me. But really, it goes back to me. I've been a Christian my whole life, but it really goes back to my first really faith-based movie I did that Dallas Jenkins is doing, The Chosen. Now, we did a movie back in 2010 called What If? Mm-hmm. And that was my first really unapologetically faith-based movie. And in my book, it's in my top 3 favorite movies I've ever been part of. And I've shot 90 movies in my life. So What If? In my book is a better movie than God's Not Dead. And I can say that without the writers getting mad about God's Not Dead, because they also wrote What If?
Yeah.
So that really put me on the road. I said, these are the kind of movies I want to do. And I've been pretty much doing them for the last 14 years.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, Kevin. It's on topic because incredible movie. And I do want to ask you about that because it seems like my basic understanding of Hollywood and conservatives don't mix. Hollywood and Christianity doesn't mix. Hollywood and Republicans don't mix. You can interchange any of those words. And so you basically put yourself on a list. You put yourself on the other team. And so, it sounds like you made a decision at some point that your good fight was to share your faith. I'm sure there's a cost for it. Maybe not the same cost as Mr. Barrington's, but there's a cost for it nonetheless. And let me ask you, when do you think you made that shift to say, you're going to fight the good fight? You're going to take your talents, your gifts, your gifting from God, and you're going to use it for His glory. Was there a moment where you made that decision?
Well, I never hid from the fact that I was conservative and a Christian, and it's never really a big problem. I first moved to L.A. back in the late 80s and started pursuing my acting career. It would come up, and I would say, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I'm a conservative. And back then, maybe the Democrats give you a hard time and whatever. But then it just turned to hell the last decade.
Yeah.
It's just everything's just flipped around. And my manager and agent called me in and said we couldn't work together anymore. And I looked at him. I said, what's the problem? I go, well, the things are changing pretty quick here in Hollywood, and the anger levels are picking up for people that are Christians and conservative. I'm going, well, why? What is going on? I mean, it was crazy to me. So when I got the boot, I love the industry. I love making movies. I love the creative process on both sides of the camera. And so my wife and I looked at each other and I said, well, let's keep making independent movies. We formed Sorbo Studios. Go to sorbostudios.com. All kinds of info there on what my wife and I are both doing. And, not only were we lucky enough to keep raising money for different movies down the road, but a lot of other independent movie producers that want to do good movies, quality movies that Hollywood used to do, because they don't do these kind of movies anymore. It's really picked up. The independent market has really exploded, and you got wonderful people on both sides of the camera. Not everybody's a Christian. Not everybody's a person of faith. But they, I get emails from top-notch camera operators and lighting guys that do big, big budget movies, Spider-Man and Thor and all this stuff. But they're saying, I want to do a movie. I said, look, I can't afford you. We do a $3 million budget. That's catering budget to the Caribbean. And they said, no, I want to do a movie that my kids will be proud of. That's what I'm getting through Sorbo Studios from all these other people from both sides of the camera. It's kind of interesting. So, I'm going to keep fighting. Yeah. So
that's such a great story. And now you were Hercules. How old were you when you were Hercules? How old?
I shot that for 7 years in my 30s. Wow. And initially was going to be 5 2-hour movies down in New Zealand. I got the very great gift of working an entire year with Anthony Quinn, who played my father, Zeus. And by movie three, halfway through filming, Universal Studios said, "We love what we see." We stayed down there. And by season three, we were the most watched TV show in the world in 176 countries. So it's crazy.
In the world.
In the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
fantastic. And I had a blast. Yeah, and that really started all for me. I mean, without that series, then I got 5 years on Andromeda, the first show ever created by Gene Roddenberry. Yeah. My Captain Dylan Hart was the first captain after Captain Kirk. And that was, to me, cool, because I grew up watching reruns of the original Star Trek.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Me too. And I got to tell you, my wife, you know, her thing, Xena. Ask him about Xena. Yes. Ask him about Xena. And she wanted
to. I'll tell you about Xena.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you about Xena. That was our third year spinoff show. And, you know, that we had an hour slot open at Universal because there was another syndicated series that got canceled. And the producers, Rob Tappert and Sam Raimi and Eric Grundman, all said, you know, why don't we do a female type of Hercules show? And that's how Xena was born. Oh, wow. And there was another actress that actually booked the part. Before she flew to New Zealand, she got incredibly ill. So talk about for Lucy Lawless for being in the right place at the right time, because she had done about 4 episodes of Hercules the first couple of years, you know, playing different characters. Mm. And it was by fate. I mean, she would be another actress in New Zealand no one would know about, but all of a sudden, boom, she got this break. And then season 5, we spun off Young Hercules. So there was an unknown teenage actor playing me by the name of Ryan Gosling. That's how he got started.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It was funny.
Somebody, he just won some sort of Mike Douglas Film Award in the Santa Barbara Film Festival a couple months ago, film, whatever it was. And somebody sent me his acceptance speech. So they had a tape, and he got up there and he said, "Whoever thought that me, as a skinny little kid trying to fill the leather pants of Kevin Sorbo in Hercules, that I'd be standing here today?"
Wow.
So I said, "I want to put that clip on my reel."
Oh, my gosh. And we're talking, what, 30 years ago, 20 years ago?
We shot that from 1993 to 2000.
Wow.
So, yeah, it finished 24 years ago already. Almost,
that's just stunning. So you go from Hercules, the number one TV show in the world, and now you're representing Jesus. You're taking on roles. I mean, that to me, that is the good fight. You know, you've got the best of the world. I'm sure you got a beautiful wife, you got an incredible family, you got fame, you got fortune, you got money, and yet now at this point in your life, you realize what really matters is God. Everything else is,
no question.
Is everything else.
Yeah.
And so this story that the firing squad, you know, I'm reading what was sent to me by your publicist, says the firing squad reminds us that we all face a firing squad, either a serious life challenge or our own mortality itself. Like the real people the actors portray, we can learn, lean on our creator as we discern God's will. And the powerful story is set to impact audiences nationwide in August 2024. You guys are raising $25 million advertising funds to premiere The Firing Squad in 2,500 theaters. Let me ask you, what do you want people to leave this film with? When they go watch it, what is your hope that the watcher gets from this?
Well, you just said the word, hope. I think we live in such a crazy, insane, fear-filled times because governments of every level love using fear to control our lives. And I'm always telling people, you know, the sheep are going to be sheep, but the lion's got to wake up and not be afraid. Get out there. And, you know, I'm hoping this movie shows people that you can find redemption anywhere in this world. God is there for everybody, and no matter what you do, you're always going to have roadblocks in your life. How do you react to that roadblock? You know, unfortunately, too many people want to blame the world and just take it out on everybody else on the internet. And all that does is fuel their own hate and anger for themselves. I tell people all the time, I go, you got to look in the mirror. It's the Michael Jackson song, Man in the Mirror. Look in the mirror and say, you know what? This happened to me. What am I going to do about it? And stop whining and complaining and pointing fingers at everybody else for your problems in life. God never promised any of us an easy time. So get out there and work hard. We're always going to have ups and downs. So it's up to you to make the downs into ups as quickly as possible.
But what you're talking about is warrior mindset. Then I think of you as Hercules and all that. And that I think that's what's missing today, Kevin, is that warrior mindset. You know, Way of Warrior, you know, I've been doing intensive leadership training for 32 years, Like It Matters Radio, Way of Warrior training. And we've got all kinds of battles out there. You got, you know, the movie industry, man versus nature, man versus man, man versus society, man versus himself, the intifada. And the greatest battle is the battle for identity. Who am I? And then you got that spiritual battle. And too many people won't fight today, won't fight the good fight. They'll battle on politics. They'll battle for a pronoun. But I'm encouraging people to fight their good fight. And you found your good fight. Well, how would you encourage people to fight their good fight? I mean, you're a warrior. You're a guy who's out there fighting every day. What kind of word of encouragement for other people out there to encourage them to fight the good fight? What would you say to them, Kevin?
Stop being afraid. I tell you what, the last 6-7 years, because I've been so open about this, and so, you know, they took me out. I mean, I lost 4 million followers on Facebook. Zuckerberg and his wussy little minions took me down for speaking the truth about COVID.
Amen.
I spoke the truth. And now everything I said that they said was misinformation and conspiracy theories, all of them been proven true.
Yep.
So I get guys coming up to me on set, and it could be another actor, it could be a director, it could be a lighting guy, makeup artist. They take me to the side of the, you know, studio like we're doing a drug deal, and they're very quiet. Like, hey, man, thanks for being a voice for us. And I go, be a voice for yourself. Oh, no, man, look what happened to you. And I said, look what happened to me. I'm still making movies. And here you are in a movie that I'm doing.
Amen.
You're still going to find work. Yeah, the Hollywood doesn't call me anymore for big movies or big budget TV shows, whatever, which is really sad to me because I don't harbor that kind of anger and hate that they have. They have so much anger. They just live in this black hole, and all it does is make their lives more pitiful. And it's sad to me because, to me, I believe in the freedom of speech. I believe, but you're getting that taken away.
Yep.
But be a voice. Don't be afraid. Get out there and open your mouth. You don't have to be angry about it. Just because you yell louder doesn't make you right. So
Amen.
To me, I just tell people, don't be afraid. Don't let anyone set your limitations, especially yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I love seeing not just you, I mean, you're famous, but Cuba Gooding Jr., you know, he plays Samuel Wilson, a Nigerian inmate. And I love his story. You know, he talked about, I'm quoting him, he said, our nation, let alone the entire world, has appeared to move away from God in so many areas of society. It's time for us to get back to our faith. And he says, our film, The Firing Squad, is a story of redemption, the likes of which I've not seen in a very long time. In fact, when he read the script, Gooding said, he just wept. So cool to see two famous, because you are famous, Kevin, whether you want to be or not, you know you are famous. You're Hercules. All the stuff you've done, people look up to you. You know, you talked about Michael Jackson, the man in the mirror, and I always think, well, look what Michael Jackson, as gifted and talented as he was, look what he could have done for the kingdom, but he used it for his own gain, his own glory. And Kevin, your good fight now is not only, you're not just making a name for Kevin Sorbo. Kevin Sorbo's got a name. You're now glorifying the name of Jesus Christ. And that truly, I believe, for any child of God, is truly the good fight, yes?
No question. Look, the road I'm on right now is incredibly satisfying. I made a very good salary on Hercules and my series Andromeda. When Hollywood booted me out, it's funny. I looked at my wife that first year after Hollywood gave me the boot. I said, do you realize I made 90% less money this year than I made the year before?
Wow.
But I said, you know what? And you realize it's not all about that. I mean, I do, you know, these $3 million movies, $2 million movies, you got to spread that around to the entire crew. So we're not getting paid much. Everybody's working it because they want to do this kind of work. They want to get out there and be part of this. And that's what I loved about the, this movie with the Firing Squad, because once again, you said about the message, you mentioned the word hope, but you also mentioned the word redemption.
Yep.
I hope that's what people take out of here, is hope and redemption, that there is a better way out there, and stop whining and complaining about your life, because people don't realize how good they have it compared to other people around the world right now.
Oh, it's incredible.
And this movie, and Tim Che, you know, our director, his goal is to bring 1 million lives to Christ through this movie, which I think is an admirable goal. And what we need, though, because once again, we don't have $1 billion to promote this thing and have a commercial on every football and basketball game. We need people to support these movies. That's what God's Not Dead became. $2 million movie made $140 million because people talked about it. So theater owners don't care what they show. They want to sell popcorn and sodas.
Yep.
We need people to show up opening weekend, which is August 2nd. Go to firingsquadfilm.com. Firingsquadfilm.com. See the trailer, all kinds of information on what this movie's about. And please check it out. You'll be surprised of all the extra stuff that's on that site.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Kevin, I am honored. When I heard about interviewing Kevin Sorbo, I'm thinking, you know, Hercules and Xena and all this, and God's Not Dead and all that. But, you know, what I really got down to is God said, that's your brother. He's my son. And, you know, I teach a lot about existential, you know, why are you here? Why do you get up each day, do what you do, go home at night, get up the next day and do it again and again and again. We got to know who we are. We got to know why we're here. But the most important question is to know whose we are. And Kevin Sorbo knows whose he is. And so I'm honored to have you join us on Way of Warrior. I'm absolutely excited to share your movie, to go see the movie. And please, listeners, August 2nd, not only go, but bring people with you, share it with people. Let's make this a $500 million movie. So it's an honor to have you here, Kevin Sorbo. Whenever you want to come back on Like It Matters Radio, you're always a welcome guest, my friend, okay? Isn't that incredible? Kevin Sorbo, just a man like all of us. He's my brother. He's a child of God. You might see him as a wealthy man. You might see him as a famous man. But God says that he is not a respecter of persons. If you and Kevin Sorbo were standing at the foot of the cross, God looks at you both the same. He is a warrior. He is fighting the good fight. And with all his fame, with all his success, he's realized at this point in his life what really matters. His good fight. And today, that's what we're talking about, Way on Warrior, is fighting your good fight. We hear it all the time. What are you willing to die for? The problem is we only die one time, but we live daily. And I believe it's harder to live for something than to die for something. So here's a couple questions. Why do you get up each day, do what you do, go home at night, get up the next day, and do it again and again and again? Why do you go through all that you go through? What is the purpose of your pleasure and your pain? What stirs you up? What drives you beyond the normal limits? What keeps you up at night? Or what is your greatest fear? See, in these questions, we will find our good fight. I'm going to tell you right now, it takes emotion. See, the word emotion, I'm an etymologist by trade, emotion, emote. Do you see it there? Mote, motion, motivate, motor. Don't you get it? It moves things. When I watch the killer shows, I call them Independent Discovery Channel, and they want to know what's the motive, what made someone do what they do. We talk about a good coach, a great motivator. What that means is that coach is able to move people to a better path than they're on right now. If you were impressed with my car, it was pulled over on the side of the road, you'd want me to lift up the hood, and you'd want to look inside, and you'd want to see what type of motor that thing has, right? Because the motor moves the car. It makes it go fast. That's what the word emotion is. Companies often get learning confused with listening. They provide lecture-style training sessions which go through one ear and out the other, when the key to learning at work is to trigger some kind of emotion. Your emotion is the byproduct of the right side of your brain. Your left side of your brain is verbal, logical, analytical. When you think of your brain, you're actually thinking of your left side of your brain. But your right side of your brain has all those special endowments that make us human beings: creativity, consciousness, emotion. And emotion moves. Everything important that happens to us in life rouses emotion. And yet we got people going through life numb. Life is an undulating line. It has highs and lows, has peaks and valleys. And what happens in life is people stop dreaming. They've been disappointed, and so they don't go too high. And we all know what it's like to have pain. And a lot of people are so hurt, they no longer feel pain, so they don't go too low. And if you don't go too high, you don't go too low, that's called a flat line. And the problem with flatline is you're dead. You can't respond. Nothing gets to you. And I see so many people who are still breathing, who heart's still pumping, their bragging rights is nothing gets to them. That's not something to brag about. That's what happens to dead people. That's what happened to numb people. And here's the problem. If nobody can get to you, then nobody can get to you. If they can't get to you, then your heart's closed off. And then your mind's closed off, and you're ready for the grave. Emotions have a point. Emotions have a purpose. Matter of fact, the deepest, simplest way to motivate is something called neuroassociative conditioning. It is the base element of motivation. It comes down to two things. You're either moving towards something or you're moving away from something. You're either moving towards something you desire, pleasure, or you're moving away from something you don't desire or hurts, which is pain. And so we want to have emotion. You can read every self-help book, but it's not until you hear of someone beating the odds to achieve something remarkable that you learn to set some goals. The emotion creates inspiration. Listen to the interview I just had with Kevin Sorbo. Gets stirred up. Talks about what's really important, what really matters, is the director says through that movie, he wants to bring 1 million people to a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. Now that's playing big. That's scary. That's exciting. That is emotive. And so it is with learning at work or learning anywhere. We want to have emotions. They stir us up to stimulate our learning. Emotions like pain. Even if you see a mistake coming, let it happen. It might have a short-term negative effect on the business, but it'll have a longer-term positive impact on your employees. Pain's part of life. Joy. People learn best when they're having fun, when the body's relaxed, the mind is more open, and when your teaching is easily embraced. It's okay to laugh and learn. Enthusiasm. I love that word. It comes from the Greek word enthus, and it means of the spirit. Instead of just offering development and job-related technical skills, also provide employees with training that's more relevant to their career objectives and personal interests. And my favorite one is confidence. It is an emotion. A lot of people don't think that's emotion. It is. Self-confidence is the innate intellect that we call Superman. Because when we are self-confident, it affects everything else. I do my leadership training. Go to wayofwarrior.training to read about it. I've been doing it for 32 years. I get people from all over the world that come to my training, including people who don't speak English. And I get a group of people from Mexico all the time. They're Mexican nationals. They carry a Mexican passport. Their primary language is Spanish. And they come to my training, and they must do the entire class in English. Now, I speak very fast, very intense, multisyllabic words. They don't understand most of what I'm saying, but they can see what I'm doing. They can feel my emotion. They can see my intensity. They can feel my intensity. They can hear my timbre. They can hear my emotion. And by the end of the training, it's life-changing. Now, here's the thing. By the end of the training, their English is much, much better. But here's the thing. I'm not teaching English. You see, their self-confidence through the process affected everything else they did, including their ability to speak English. You see, in most workplaces, trainers and managers are preoccupied with the transfer of knowledge when it's the motivation to embrace the knowledge that makes the biggest difference. I am not a big teacher of what I call game show information, Jeopardy knowledge. In other words, Jeopardy knowledge to me is some piece of knowledge that's only going to have value if you're on a game show called Jeopardy. And I'm a firm believer, if I can't apply it, then I don't need to know it. And so anything I teach with the ultimate aim of application, because otherwise it's a waste of time. And doing things without emotion is a waste of time. And you will never find your good fight if you are not emotionally involved with it. I'm going to tell you right now, whatever your good fight is, here's one of the secrets, you should be charged up about it. They should get you stirred up. Even if other people don't agree with it, even if other people don't like it, it should be emotional. So, what is emotion? Emotions, intense feelings to give expression to. It's applying movement. Emotions are inherently neither positive nor negative. Rather, they serve as the single most powerful source of human energy, authenticity, and drive, and can offer us a wellspring of intuitive wisdom. In fact, emotions provide us with vital and potentially profitable information every minute of the day. Now, this feedback from the heart and not the mind is what ignites creative genius. It keeps you honest with yourself, shapes trusting relationships, provides an inner compass for your life and career, and it guides you to unexpected possibilities. Now, contrary to conventional thinking, emotions are rarely intrusions into our lives. They are not. They are intelligent, sensitive, beneficial, even wise. They are the primary source of motivation, information, personal power, innovation, and influence. In most cases, emotions are not at odds with good judgment and reasoning. Rather, they enliven, they inspire good judgment and reasoning, and are linked to success and profitability. Consider this statement. Everything important that happens to us arouses emotion. Emotions are indispensable fuel that propels us to greatness. Now, emotions come from the heart. When I did this research about 30 years ago, we were told that we can measure the heart's energy from 5 feet away. I'm going to tell you, it's a lot farther than that now. Our heart is the power source. It activates our deepest values. It radiates. It knows things our mind does not and cannot know. The heart is the place of courage, spirit, integrity, commitment, compassion, empathy, understanding, caring, and most of the other great leadership characteristics. It is a source of energy. Yep. Sure is. It is a source of energy. It's the passion of the Christ, a source of energy that calls us to learn, cooperate, lead, and serve. Now, here's the key. We're not our job. Our job is something we do to gain money to pay for things. But we are who we are, and we should be the same person at work as we are at home. But you're also not your Instagram account. You're not your Facebook account, or the number of followers you have on Twitter. You're not a car nor a house. You're not your muscles. You're not that body. You're not that brain. You are the spirit that occupies that body, that occupies their brains. And most people can tell you what they don't want in life, but you know what few can tell you? What they do want. This is similar to identity. We've established what we are not. I'm not that type of person. I'm not this type of person. I'm not that type of person. I'm glad you know what you're not. But who are you? And why are you here? And what's your purpose for this thing called life? And so today, I want to help you figure out what is your good fight. Because there's lots of battles. You can be battling with your spouse. You can be battling with your worship leader or your pastor. You can be battling with your child. And those battles matter. But the ultimate battle is for your identity. The ultimate battle is to know whose you are. Not just who you are, but whose you are. And so question ourselves. You know, Aristotle said an unexamined life is not worth living. Paul the Apostle said to examine yourself to see if you're still in the faith. So we got to question ourselves. I'm going to tell you right now, as a leader, if you're not questioning yourself, you're not getting better. You're not under construction. And so a couple of questions for yourself. We want to keep it short and simple, soldier. Remember, the number one weapon formed against us is confusion. Because when we're confused, we don't speak up, we don't step out, we don't act up. When we're confused, we hold our tongue. When we're confused, we stay down. When we're confused, we don't say or do anything. And so we want to keep it simple, soldier. Be a great kisser. So here's it, the key. Tell me about your personality. Write it down. You're not going to tell it to me now. I'm not listening to you, right? Write it down. In a few words, describe your personality. Another question. Off the top of your head, list five of your most constant desired interests. Here's another question. If I was to go up to the person that knew you the best and ask them to give me five words to describe you, what would you want those five words to be? Describe your character, including your virtues, vices, strengths, and weaknesses. Here's another question for you. List some opportunities that have opened doors for you. Who facilitated those opportunities, and what makes them memorable? In the coming year, what opportunities would you like to have open to you? Who are the people who you most often deal with? List the greatest joys, the greatest challenges in dealing with them. If you have a mentor, a leader in your life, describe what you admire most about them or respect about them or desire to be like them. What are those qualities which you would like to emulate? And another question, consider, list the places where you have traveled to. You can list just the ones that had a clear effect on you or all of them. And in each place, what changed in you as a result of your visit? What did visiting each place teach you? When I was talking to Kevin on the phone, I asked him about Jim Caviezel. And I remember hearing Jim Caviezel in an interview saying, when he played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ for Mel Gibson, he said it altered his life. It changed him forever. What about you? What type of things have changed you forever, for the good and for the not so good? So these questions about bringing information out of you. The next step is to review your answers with a trusted friend, a mentor. And what conclusions about your life's mission can you draw from those questions? Where have you been in life, and where do you want to go in life? Your answers to the question above should give you a picture of what you can contribute to the world, because that's really what it's about. But here's the problem. We get distracted. We get so wrapped up in the temporal world that we forget the bigger picture, The good book says that it's appointed for man to die one time and then comes the judgment. It also says, don't fear those who can kill the body, but fear he who can kill the body and the soul. That's why I was talking to Kevin Sorbo. There's not much that scares Kevin Sorbo. I can tell you that right now. He's Hercules. But can I tell you one thing without really knowing him? Is not fulfilling his mission scares him. Is not glorifying his God scares him. Standing before God and hearing, I never knew you, be gone from me, you work of iniquity. I can guarantee you, scares Kevin Sorbo, scares Hercules, just like it scared Samson as well. Read the book. We are half brains. What do I mean by that? We're running around in an unconscious state. We've all driven home before without realizing how we drove home. We only use 3 to 5% of our brain consciously. We have 60 to 18,000 thoughts a day. 34 gigabytes of information go through our head every day. We blink for 1/10 of our life. Our eyes are closed, blinking for 1/10 of our life. We sleep 1/3 of our life away. We have 4 levels of learning, and they have unconscious in them, unconscious competence. I'm unconscious incompetence, conscious competence, and then unconscious competence. Do you hear the unconscious? We go on autopilot. We're finding our purpose. It involves self-reflection, exploration, purpose-driven, time allotment. When you live your life like it matters, it does. This is what Like It Matters Radio is all about. To understand that our life has value, that we're not just here because. That we might not be Kevin Sorbo, you might not be Scott Black, but you are you, and you have a purpose, and you have a passion, and you have a vision. The key is to identify it, and we got to question ourselves, we got to ask ourselves, but there's other things. We've got to begin with the end in mind. The power of visualization, visualizing the outcomes, very, very important. Values. Make a list of your values, then narrow it down to 5 of your most important goals. You got to have some goals. Why do you get up each day, do what you do, go home at night, get up the next day, and do it again and again and again and again? You have a vision board, passion, understanding our fears. This is what I teach. This is why you don't need to go to wayofwarrior.training. This podcast, my radio show, even one-on-one counseling is great. But nothing replaces what takes place in my 2.5 days. Give me 2.5 days at wayofwarrior.training, and I'll give you a new marriage. Give me 2.5 days at wayofwarrior.training, and I'll give you new hope. Give me 2.5 days at wayofwarrior.training, and I'll give you a new purpose. Because you got to enter in the fiery furnace. And from the fiery furnace, all that has no value is removed. And the only thing left is that which has great value. See, this is where it's easier, more fulfilling, more powerful to have a guide. Someone like me on the outside guiding you so you can be emotionally involved in the fire with HBS. Now, here's the key. Just like our past can make us bitter or better, HBS has 2 meanings. And it all depends on your mindset, all depends on your commitment, all depends on are you fighting the good fight? HBS can mean heart, body, and soul, and that's for those you fighting the good fight. But to those you just existing, for those you afraid to fight the good fight, you know what HBS means to you? Hurts, bruises, and scars. And as Kevin Sorbo said in the interview earlier, we live in a nation of victims. And I've said this for years. We get our DNA tested to see what percentage of a victim we are. But you're not a victim, you're a victor. You're not bitter. You're called to be better. When you get knocked on your butt, just like Proverbs 24:16 says, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and you hit it again and again and again. Why? Because a righteous man will stumble 7 times but get back up. But the wicked stumble into ruin. So let me give you a great article I found, 7 ways to find your purpose in life. And to me, the purpose is your good fight. And so you need to have meaningful long-term goals. It's good for your well-being. And this actually article is from wellbeing.com, I'm pretty sure. So a couple things. Number 1, identify the things you care about. See, remember we talked about the emotion. What do you stirs you up? What gets you excited? There is no right, wrong, good, or bad. What stirs you up? Identify the things you care about. Kevin Sorbo and I care about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. We know eschatologically that we're at the end and that this is an important time. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So you've got to decide things that you care about. Start making a list of what are the most important things you care about. I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about movements, vision, values. Number two, reflect on what matters most to you because it's your life. Remember, we die one time. What are you willing to live for? I believe it's a lot easier to die for something than it is to live for something. I'm not asking you, what are you willing to die for? I'm asking you, what are you willing to live for? Which brings us to number three, recognize your strengths and talents. God has equipped you. God has gifted you. That's what Jeremiah 29:11 means. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans for hope and a future. In Ephesians 2:10, for you are God's masterpiece, workmanship, created new in Jesus, prepared in advance for good works to walk through. Are you willing? God has equipped you. What are your natural strengths? What are your natural talents? How about this one? What do you like to volunteer at? Think about this. When you volunteer, it's a serving a lower level to experience things. I love to serve. I am Lunch Lady Black. I donate my time at my kids' school, Burton Adventist Academy in Arlington, Texas. I'm Lunch Lady. I cook at a church. Wednesday nights, I'm at my church cooking food, doing Bible study. I love to cook big pots of spaghetti and chili and chicken noodle soup, and I make leftovers for friends and for people at church. I like to serve. I like to create. Number five, imagine your best possible self. I talk all the time about the George Bernard Shaw you could have been. If you were to live your life without the pain, without the doubt, without the limiting belief systems, if you lived to your full potential, not partial man, but fully man, how would that you show up? What are you doing? What's important to you? What do you really care about and why? Number six, cultivate positive emotions like gratitude and awe. Gratitude is one of the greatest emotions you can ever have because you can't be grateful and a victim at the same time. You gotta choose. Just like if you are a child of God, get rid of your victim status. They are polar opposites. The mind cannot hold two polar opposite things in the same space. It can't. It cannot be day and night at the same time. You cannot be a victim and a child of the risen King at the same time. If you have a grace, which is unmerited favor, how could you claim victim status? You are a prince or a princess in the kingdom of God based on what somebody else did for you, based on nothing that you did. You can't be a victim of anything. And the last thing I want you to consider is you start considering what is your good fight. Look to the people you admire. What are traits in those people that you really like? What are qualities? What are things about them that you admire, that you look up to? What are things about that person that you could adopt and make it part of your experience? See, nothing replaces the 2.5-day intensives I do at wayofwarrior.training. This podcast is great. I listen to these on a regular basis will help you a lot. But people learn best what they see, hear, and do. And so the key is we got to explore our values. We got to explore our passions. You know, if we want to find our good fight, we need to go to where our passion is. It's critical to discover our life purpose. This is our driver. These are things that you would do for free, that expose your values, expose your passion. This will always bring with it emotional involvement. And if you're not emotionally involved, then it's not your purpose. Picture your life as a grand adventure with you as an intrepid explorer. Every explorer needs a reliable compass. And for us, that compass is a deep understanding of who we are and what truly matters to us. So let's begin our expedition by delving into your values and passions. See, when we align this emotional energy with our existential values and drive, it creates an alignment. Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi wrote a great book called Flow. He's a Russian scientist. When we have the existential values and drive, our passion and our vision all together, it creates a flow. I call it an internal congruence. It's like using the elements to sail a ship. When done well with understanding and expertise, you can move a boat around the world and enjoy the process. I remember hearing a story about sailing in a certain Italian harbor and how hazardous it was. There was rocks and cliffs and it was jaggedy and you had to align it just right. And to avoid a wreck, ships would align themselves perfectly with three lights. And when the captain sees these three lights as one, he can safely proceed up the narrow channel. Looking up at those three lights is a great metaphor, a great analogy of what we can do to make our journey more powerful, more purposeful, and aligned with our identity. Those three lights are: who am I? Why am I here? What is my ultimate outcome of my life? Today, the question on the table is, what are your three harbor lights to guide you? When you align those three, that you know you're in a flow, that you know you're congruent with who you are and what you're called to be. How about this? Our mission statement consists of three parts. It's who we are, it's what we do, and the quality in which we do it. Imagine lining those three up to find your good fight. But we need to continually question ourselves. Questions move us mentally. Aristotle said an unexamined life is not worth living. And questions move us mentally and cause us to seek answers, thus filling in the blanks. And it's important as a leader to question ourselves. My three-day intensives that I've been doing for over 30 years will create the environment you need to do the things you need to do to become the person you desire to be. Go to wayofwarrior.training. Read about it. Discovering your life purpose is not a destination. It is an ongoing journey of self-discovery and growth. Embrace the adventure. Celebrate every step forward and be open to adjusting your course as you learn and evolve. Remember, even the smallest actions can set monumental change in motion. So take that first step towards your purpose and let the journey unfold before you today. Today is the day to begin your journey toward your good fight, and the time is now. Life is a battlefield, and the questions we've been considering today is, what is your good fight? When we began this podcast, I told you of my three outcomes for you, the listener. Number one, I said today, I want to help you understand that life is a battlefield, and we are called to our good fight, to fight our good fight. Number two, I said I had you consider, what is your good fight? And number three, lastly today, I had you question yourself to help you find out what your good fight is. Thank you for listening to Way of Warrior Fighting the Good Fight podcast. For more information about the life-changing trainings, coaching, or to connect with me personally for corporate events and one-on-one coaching, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does. It is Way of Warrior.